May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. We journey together in these summer months, we who gather along the banks of the Charles, whether near or afar. We journey along with friends and with guests during our annual summer preacher series here at Marsh Chapel. We journey this summer, charting new directions in discipleship. Over the course of this liturgical year, year A of the Revised Common Lectionary, we have been journeying with Matthew, who is the leftmost figure in our altarpiece here at Marsh Chapel, depicting Jesus and the four evangelists, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. For the past 3 weeks, we have abided for a time in the 10th chapter of Matthew's Gospel as Jesus calls and sends out the 12 disciples. We would do well to remember how that sending begins in verses 5 and 6. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: go nowhere among the Gentiles, and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Most of the rest of the 10th chapter delineates just how fraught their mission will be, replete with persecution, rejection, and division. At last, we come this week to the final 3 verses of the chapter and the conclusion of Jesus' mandate in mission to the disciples. At last, things are beginning to look a bit brighter. At last, the disciples are encouraged to gird up their loins and persevere, for they will receive the just rewards of the righteous if they do. And so, Jesus declares, whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward, and whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous, and whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. In sum, good things come to those who persist. And so we pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off, emboldened and encouraged by Jesus' words of instruction. Off we go, continuing on our journey. Now, wait a minute, I forgot. Where was it you said we were to go again, Jesus? Go nowhere among the Gentiles, and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Israel, right, off we go. Now, wait just a second. We are of the house of Israel. We descend from the house and family of Jacob, and what's more, so do you, Jesus. Well, isn't this a fine how do you do? This is no journey to see the sights, to get out in the world, to carry the gospel to the ends of the earth. Jesus is telling us to go home. Indeed, Jesus finds it easier to find faithfulness outside of Israel than within. Just back in chapter 8, we recall that when he entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, appealing to him and saying, Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed in terrible distress. And he said to him, I will come and cure him. The centurion answered, Lord, I am not worthy to have you come under my roof, but only speak the word, and my servant will be healed." When Jesus heard him, he was amazed and said to those who followed him, "Truly I tell you, in no one in Israel have I found such faith. I tell you, many will come from east and west and will eat with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, while the heirs of the kingdom will be thrown into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Many will come from east and west and will eat with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven." We remember that God made covenant with Abram, who was renamed Abraham, and that his descendants would become nations, including both of his sons, Isaac, who he almost sacrificed, and Ishmael, who he sent away, and whose nation was the harbinger of Islam. But it was Isaac's son Jacob who was renamed Israel, whose tribe would become lost, so that Jesus must send the disciples to find them. "Indeed, in no one in Israel have I found such faith." And the heirs of the kingdom will be thrown into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. It would be all too easy, and over the course of Christian history, we have proven all too susceptible to making this finding of a lack of faith in Israel a justification of anti-Semitism. To be sure, the community of the Gospel of Matthew was in the midst of a wrenching divorce within the synagogues between those who believed that Jesus of Nazareth was the Messiah, and those who did not. However, it would be a mistake to conclude that the moral of this story is to write off those who did not understand Jesus to be the Messiah. The moral of the story, instead, is that to learn what it means to be faithful, that is, what it means to be a disciple, and thus what we should be teaching and mentoring each other to become, we may have to look outside of our own community, as Jesus did here in the 8th chapter and again in the 15th. Just then, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and started shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David! My daughter is tormented by a demon." But he did not answer her at all. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she keeps shouting after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." He answered, "It is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered her, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed instantly. This is not a matter of those outside of Israel being right and those within being wrong. This question as to proper faithfulness and discipleship in Matthew is not anti-Semitism. Just as Jesus found a Roman centurion and a Canaanite woman to be faithful by contrast with Israel, so too he found his own Israelite disciples to be faithful by contrast with his natural family in the 12th chapter. While he was still speaking to the crowds, his mother and his brothers were standing outside, wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, "Look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside, wanting to speak to you." But to the one who told him this, Jesus replied, "Who is my mother? And who are my brothers?" And pointing to his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." So, you want to be a disciple of Jesus, do you? Go home. Go home. Go home to the lost sheep of Israel. That is, go home to the church, your tribe, and your nation, and testify to the faithfulness you have encountered on the highways and byways of life. Go home to your brothers and your sisters and your mother and tell them of those from the east and from the west whom you expect to meet at the banquet table of heaven. My, you may be thinking, that does sound hard. Indeed, there is a great deal more at stake in providing welcome, in providing hospitality, whether to a prophet or to a righteous person or to a little one, than merely providing food and drink and shelter. After all, to welcome one of them is to welcome Jesus, is to welcome God. Consider, then, the sermon preached on Palm Sunday in 1959 at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama, by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. He took as his sermon text two passages from the Gospel of John. "I have other sheep which are not of this fold," from the 10th chapter, and, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father." From the 14th chapter. Dr. King applied both of these verses to Gandhi, and in doing so made two significant moves. The first is to simultaneously acknowledge the religious otherness of Gandhi and to adopt that very otherness of Gandhi's life, practice, thought, and person into the fold of God. King argues that Gandhi is a Christian not by being a Christian, but by being a Hindu, and thus not of this fold. This is to say that it is by virtue of Gandhi's Hinduism that he belongs to King's God. The second move is even more startling, especially since it arrives in a sermon on Palm Sunday, third only in importance on the Christian liturgical calendar to Christmas and Easter. The appellation of the second text signals that Dr. King believed that in his life, Gandhi had achieved greater things than Jesus. To be sure, by noting that Jesus predicted this, King is safeguarding the sanctity of the Christian narrative. Nevertheless, the greatest accomplishment of Jesus, according to that Christian narrative, is nothing less than the salvation of the world. It is that very Christian narrative, then, that Dr. King employs to elevate the significance of Gandhi's life to the level of soteriological efficacy. This is a shocking move for any Christian preacher to make, even one trained at the Boston University School of Theology. Dr. King came north via Morehouse College in Atlanta and Crozier Divinity School in Philadelphia to take his PhD in systematic theology at Boston University. It was on that journey that he learned about Gandhi, not least from the Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman right here at Marsh Chapel. Then he went home. He went home to the South. He went home to Atlanta and to Selma and to Montgomery. And he testified to the faithfulness he had encountered on the way. And what did Gandhi's faithfulness consist in, you may be wondering? The faithfulness of Gandhi may best be summed up in a word, satyagraha. Loosely translated, insistence on or holding fast to truth. Satyagraha was the name Gandhi gave to his philosophy of nonviolent resistance. It was also the name he gave to the ashram he founded. Of the first half of the term, Gandhi says, the word satya, truth, is derived from sat, which means being. Nothing is or exists in reality except truth. That is why Sat, or truth, is perhaps the most important name of God. In fact, it is more correct to say that truth is God than to say that God is truth. But as we cannot do without a ruler or a general, names of God such as King of Kings or the Almighty are and will remain generally current. On deeper thinking, however, it will be realized that Sat or Satya is the only correct and fully significant name for God. A testament to truth we may also find yet further east in China. Consider then the words of the scholar Xunzi of the 3rd century BCE. If a man has attained perfection of truthfulness, he will have no other concern than to uphold the principle of humanity and to behave with justice. If with truthfulness of mind he upholds the principle of humanity, it will be given form. Having been given form, it becomes intelligible. Having become intelligible, it can produce transmutation. If with truthfulness of mind he behaves with justice, it will accord with natural order. According with natural order, it will become clear. Having become clear, it can produce transformation. To cause transmutation and transformation to flourish in succession is called the power of nature. Truth is at the root of the power of nature. Truth is the only correct and fully significant name for God. Here are my brother and my sisters and my mother. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Could the will of God be anything other than truth? Faithfulness. Discipleship. Many will come from east and west, and will eat with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. Faithfulness, discipleship. Go home. Go home. Go home to the lost sheep of Israel. Go home to your tribe and your nation. Go home and testify to the faithfulness you have encountered on the highways and byways of life. Go home and witness to the discipleship of the Roman and the Canaanite and the Hindu and the Rus. Go home to your brothers and your sisters and your mother and tell them of those from the east and from the west whom you expect to meet at the banquet table of heaven. Amen.